You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Rob Davis. Rob, thanks so much for being with me today.
And thank you for having me.
Rob, we're talking about your show, Apollo, your beautiful show at Broadway Gallery. So to begin with, I want to jump into some of the paintings, but these are works that tap into your memories, right? This is about, in part, where you grew up, where the imagery is coming from where you grew up. Is that the case?
Yeah, that's often my jump point. You know, I've been working on this, sort of body of work for the last 6 years. I collaborated prior to that for about 12 years, so I had a bit of a different career prior. And in the last 6 years, I sort of started diving into this idea of, memory. And the work is always loosely based off a memory I had from the past. And then, the body of work tends to sort of take on its own life. I'll start with one reference point, and then it'll sort of come about organically.
And so, like, why this interest in the past? I mean, I also have, of course, a strong interest in the past. Memories come to my mind all the time of my childhood, and for different reasons. You know, for me, it's often nostalgic, or I'm reading a book, and something about a song, something about a parent. For you, what's your kind of relationship or interest in the past?
Well, people will often ask me, like, what are you doing? Why? How do you come about doing what you do? And, and they'll often ask, what's your sort of artist statement? And I always find that a difficult thing to answer. But what I've began telling people, because it seems to dovetail quite nicely, is, if you're familiar with the writer Joan Didion,
sure.
in her book, Slouching Towards Bethlehem, she has an essay called On Keeping a Notebook. And in that essay, she sort of talks about why people might keep a notebook or why she keeps a notebook. And she says it's usually anxious malcontents with a predilection towards loss. And then she'll go on to describe, a woman in a crepe de jean dress. Why do I have an essay or a note about a woman in a crepe de jean dress? And then she'll go on to explain that it's not necessarily about this person in the crepe de jean dress. It's a reminder for me of the time and the place and the experience that I had. And I felt that sort of sums up the way I go about making artwork perfectly. This idea of digging into the past to sort of, put us in the present. So it's really about traversing time in a way. However, a way of looking back is a way of being present currently.
I like that so much. There's a number of things. I mean, Joan Didion is a writer that I love. I mean, of course, was also really an investigative reporter. So I mean,
right.
to continue going with Joan Didion, who, I'm really a huge fan of. That book is great.
Yeah. Yeah,
she's written
great.
Amazing things. That relationship to the past is also, like, often a fraught one, right? There's things we want to remember. There's things we don't remember. I think the book she wrote about her daughter, in some ways is a memory she wants to have, right? But it was likely more complicated than that
or
heard from posthumous books, but the past is interesting thing to explore, to mine. So when you're mining the past, and again, to use Joan Didion a little bit as a reference, she's creating something from the past that's hers, right? That's the way
yes.
she wants to see it, or she remembers it. That may not be the relationship, for example, she actually had with her daughter, or her daughter's experience, or any of those things. But it's a combination of a fiction and I suppose something else, right? So I guess I'm just asking, when you begin to use imagery from the past, how much do you think it's being kind of manufactured by you, and how much is actually based in what's going on?
Well,
what happened, rather.
Right, exactly. So yeah, the mining the past. So again, I'm obviously visual, right? And a lot of my memories are based in sort of an image in a sense. And so I'll actually take something from the past. So for instance, in the show Apollo, we have this painting of three sheets hanging on a clothesline. And that is something my grandmother would actually do. You know, she would do her laundry and she would take her sheets outside to air dry in the sun. And she felt that was a much better way to, you know, deal with your linen as opposed to throwing it into a dryer. She just liked the fresh air, et cetera. And so that's an actual thing. Now, of course, being an artist, I can also mine the past in the sense that I'm mining art history. So I have all these tools in my toolbox, right? I have my recollection of an actual event, but then I also have, you know, the canon of art history that I can look through and find inspiration from as well. So if we take that painting in particular, we can take my very real experience of like, oh, my grandmother hanging these things up on the clothesline. And a little side note to that, is that once I started using my past and the images that I have in my head from my past, what I quickly realized when viewers would see the work is that it wasn't just my experience. They've had these experiences on their own. They've seen clothing on a clothesline, and it may recall for them in some note that they may not have written down, but recall that like, oh yes, I've seen this in this space and this time. So what I quickly realized is it's not just about me. These images aren't just mine, they're everyone's. And so that's why when I title something, I don't say Rob's grandmother's clothesline. I just simply call it clothesline. So that allows the viewer to enter in with their past, their memory, their recollection. Now, when it comes to the mining of the past of art history, I can take that same image and I'm like, how can I make this interesting and make it a more dynamic painting? So this body of work, I'm really focused on light. And, you know, the severe contrast between these very dark backgrounds and these very light foregrounds, inspired by, you know, Caravaggio and Vermeer and artists like that. So I'm drawing from the past. And then I can also, you know, think about the way I came to learn anything about art history was flipping through my grandmother's Bible. Now, I'm not a particularly religious person, and neither was my grandmother, but the illustrations of the stories in that Bible were all done by famous artists. So whoever had made that version of that book had decided to use art historical paintings to illustrate the stories in that book. And that was sort of a, you know, my first interaction with anything quote unquote fine art.
That's so interesting. Yeah. So let's talk more about clothesline, right? Because as you were saying, you know, a mixture of what actually happened and more. It's also, you know, if that's what your grandmother did, right? She likely didn't do it at night, right? That looks like.
Correct.
Unless I'm mistaken, right? That's this around the clothesline at night, which is cool, you know. So tell me about that, because that is a memory, and now we have a clothesline which looks really dramatic, and
right.
or that's part of what's happening there. But yeah. This is in the night. It takes on a whole different feeling. It almost looks like ghosts as well.
Exactly. That's actually a perfect statement, because again, I can mine art history for how to make something more interesting, more visually dramatic, more visually, you know, beautiful in a sense, because I do really strive for beauty in a way. So again, looking at these illustrations in my grandmother's Bible, you know, these illustrated stories. There's a Rembrandt painting of Christ with the two thieves, the crucifixion scene of Christ and the two thieves. And that's what I did. So in place of those characters, I used the sheets. So I used the linens to sort of mimic those three characters. And if you look closely at the painting and you see the support that's actually holding up the clothesline, there's a subtle little cross in there. So again, it's a reference as a way of mining the past. And then I can, you know, as a painter, I have all these tools in my toolbox, meaning like I have all these things that I can draw from. So if I can draw from the lighting of a Caravaggio, and I can draw from the content of a Rembrandt, and I can draw from all these sources, I could take my memory and make it a more interesting painted object. And so that's, you know, sort of how that painting came to be.
Yeah, it's so, I really like talking about that because that's a type of transformation happening there as well. So to talk about another one, Truck is a great one. I mean, these are all beautiful paintings, and I hope the listeners get down to see the show. But I'd like to talk about Truck, but maybe just before that, your technique of painting here. You referenced Rembrandt. You're technically a very impressive painter. How did you learn to paint like that? That's typically not what they teach in school now, right?
Right. Well, you know, it's kind of an interesting story, to be honest with you. I have very strange educational route. You know, I grew up framing houses with both my grandfathers and my father. We all framed houses. I started out as that. That was basically my lot in life, to be, you know, a carpenter framing houses. However, you know, in my late teens, early 20s, I sort of got bored in that, and I started taking classes in the evening at a local community college. And I didn't even start taking art classes. I studied, you know, I took a philosophy and a psychology class just because I was interested in that. And so I went to a community college and then found their art department there and started doing some printmaking. Now, mind you, I never had any formal art education whatsoever. So I just started taking these printmaking classes. And, you know, I guess my style at that point was a bit of a, you know, an abstract expressionist using image in a way, as opposed to just pure abstraction. And so then I transferred to an HBCU in my hometown because I was able to get a minority scholarship to go there and started taking art a little more seriously. And then at that point, the professor recognized that, hey, you know, this guy wants to go a little further than what we can provide. You should apply somewhere else. And so I went to the library and opened up an Art in America magazine and looked in the back at the section where they advertised art schools. And I picked three and applied to them. And then Chicago actually gave me the most money. So I ended up going to the School of the Art Institute of Chicago. And there, it's a very free-form sort of way of making art, very conceptual based in that we want you to do multimedia, do whatever. And so I had never taken a figure drawing class. I had never taken a traditional painting class. However, when I moved to Chicago, I needed a job. And so I got a job doing decorative and faux finish work. And we would have to go into people's homes in the suburbs, you know, these wealthy people, and do, you know, they wanted an Italian villa painted in their dining room. Right. And, you know, so I got the job. I went in there. I was working with a couple other guys, you know, and I'm like trying to take my time and paint the little window in the little villa. And the boss comes around. He's like, "What are you doing? Speed this up, man. We're here until 5 o'clock. We got to go. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. And I turned to the guy next to me and I'm like, "What is he talking about? 1, 2, 3. He's like, "Oh, light, medium, and dark. You do a light swatch, you do a medium dark, you do a dark swatch, and then blur it." And I was like, "Oh." And so it's a shorthand way of doing traditional painting. And that's how I learned how to paint in that representational style. So if anyone who's a classical painter were to really investigate my paintings, they'd be like, "Oh, this guy's a hack. What's he doing here?" So I do, you know, a very sort of shorthand way of traditional oil painting.
Yeah, oh, that's so cool. I'm so glad you explained that. So, I mean, you know, it's that kind of faux painting. I mean, you've taken it a step further. You've done something else with it as well. That's the way you're painting, but also that's somehow different than faux painting, right? Faux painting really is certain recipes, isn't it? It's not about looking, is it? It's about pattern and depth and sometimes, you know, Trombloy painting. Or is
right,
it also...
Yeah. I was just going to say, however, yes, that's correct. Sometimes you're mimicking marble, sometimes you're mimicking polished plaster, you know, things like that. However, a lot of times people would want, you know, a mural painted. Like, you know, at one point we were in someone's kitchen, we painted, you know, a faux skylight with ivy, and they wanted little putties, you know, the little sort of Rubenesque angels painted on their ceiling, but they wanted their children's faces on the putties. So, Yeah, so we would do that as well.
Oh, that's cool, right? That makes sense. So, truck. Yeah, we were talking about truck. Truck is,
Yeah.
in some ways has a specific date to it because it's a certain kind of truck. It has also that unusual kind of night light in it that clothesline
Yeah.
had, but something else is happening there, right? It's a narrative that's hard to pull apart, although it reminds me, of course, of a time in my life. It brings back a certain memory. I also spent a good amount of my life framing. So that's kind of interesting. But it seems to speak to a kind of a certain world, right? A certain I mean, that's my association with it, and I guess we
Right.
all bring our associations to it, but the
Yeah.
car itself, the model, everything is of a certain time, right?
Right. Yeah. So it's a mid-70s Ford F-150 pickup truck. And like I said before, my grandfather, my father, we framed houses together. And, every morning, our grandfather would, my father's father, my grandfather would pull up, pick us up in that Ford pickup truck and drive us to the construction site. But yeah, so that's my personal history with that truck. And you mentioned that the paintings were sort of ghost-like in a way, and that's a really good point because if you notice, none of the paintings have people in them, and that's intentional. I don't want to paint a person. I feel there's too much, direct relationship to the artist when people see a figure or a person in there, and I want these to be much more open-ended. And you mentioned a story, and so what I'm really not trying to do in the entire body of work is I'm not really trying to be didactic whatsoever. I'm not trying to take you through a very specific, narrative that I have created in my head. I'd like to be much more poetic with it, and that's my intent. I at one point in my teens, I lived with a bunch of musicians, and I saw their sort of process for songwriting, and I felt that was much more appealing to me than, a very didactic sort of story. So that's sort of how I think about entering it, creating an entire body of work. And when I do make an exhibition like Apollo, I do have a narrative in my head in a sense, but like I said, I want it to be much more poetic than didactic. And so if we start thinking about the content of the pieces in the work, and someone, brought it up to me like, wow, this body of work in particular looks quite different from your last body of work that was much brighter, a lot more colors. And I just sort of said, yeah, kind of dark paintings for dark times. And that was really a sort of an impulse that I had based off of looking at Goya's black paintings. So that's why you have that really intense, dark background running through all the work was really sort of a jump point from Goya's black paintings that he painted in his home that had a really sort of subversive nature to them. They were of witches, they were of these things, but he was really sort of commenting on the time and place that he was living. They're often read now through art historical lens as being really subversive, potentially about, what was happening politically and religiously around him. And if we think about the Ford truck, we often forget about Ford himself, who had, a bit of a dark narrative behind him when he was first starting out and later seemed to shed. But if we think about that, again, sort of subversively, and like if we think of it as Henry Ford, that's why the back of the truck is there, so the name would be really prominent. We can sort of dive into that character if we decide to go down the rabbit hole as a viewer.
Yeah, that's yeah, I love talking about that. That's really fun. And there's one more I wanted to talk about. And again, I hope all listeners can go check out this show before it closes. Window. Window is quite different in terms of space than both of the ones that we've been talking about, right? Window is it is a window, but it's suffused with light. It seems to be all about the light, but also has that kind of lace on the window, the shadows of the lace. It's again a kind of a way of painting that harks to the past, but also it's something I feel like I see more now too. Just really impressive sense of light and shadow and pattern and texture. It feels like we're there, like we're being immersed in this. It's an unusual painting. Also has kind of, you know, a lot of dark around it. Is this also a memory, a window that you've seen that was part of your childhood?
Right. Well, no, more than a memory, it's sort of my chance to, you know, it's my Eddie Van Halen guitar solo moment. You know, I get to show all my, I get to do the, you know, all the chords and scales and really sort of dive into painting with a capital PAINT. So it, you know, in a way it's the exclamation point in the exhibition, you know, painting throughout, again, through an art historical lens, if we think about it, has always been considered, you know, a window to the world. And often that's used to describe any painting in a way. And so it sort of has that double entendre, right? It's a painting of a window. It's also the window, a window to the world. And it also does have a memory aspect to it, because my grandmother would have those curtains in her house. And if we think about, you know, again, if we think about these through an art historical lens, the traditional, specifically Dutch painting, which has a huge, you know, influence on what this show has in it visually, lace was a signifier of wealth. And, you know, I grew up very blue collar, very working class. And my grandmother would have these sort of faux lace curtains in her house. And in retrospect, I could think about those curtains as this sort of, you know, signifier of wealth, or this sort of, you know, facsimile of wealth, or, you know, it implies that, oh, I have this beautiful, expensive, luxurious thing as well. And of course, I'm sure my grandmother thought they were quite beautiful, but the doily on the table as well is the reference to the lace in the golden age of Dutch still life and those paintings of Frans Hall and artists like that. So again, as an artist, I have all, with art history, I have all these tools in my tool bag. And I also was thinking a lot about Barnett Newman's Zip paintings compositionally. And so that window actually functions very similar to one of his Zips, that the paint running directly through the middle of the canvas. And of course, we have Vermeer, and Vermeer's main focus of light was always the window in the upper left. And so I have all these, you know, references to play off of, but then I'm like, okay, watch, here's my skill set. I get to do my guitar solo in this painting, you know, with the lace and the shadows of the lace on the table, on top of the lace of the doily, on top of the patterning of the wood. So it's really almost like a show-off painting in a sense.
Yeah, it sure is. It's a beauty. Thanks for sharing that with me. And again, listeners, I hope you can look at the images here, but also go check out the show. There are links here for that. I want to ask you one more question before we go, a little off topic. What are you reading at the moment?
Well, to be honest with you, I had gone back and listened to audiobooks in the studio. I just consume them one after the other after the other. And I just did The Brothers Karamazov.
Yeah, that sounds great. Inspiring. Rob, I want to thank you so much for talking to me today. It's been a pleasure. Again, listeners, go see the show or follow the links here. Thanks again, Rob, for your time and putting together this beautiful show.
Thank you.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.